She awoke to grinding at the door and the feeling of blistering cold seeping into her bones. Her open hand dominated her field of view, and she spied the golden ring atop her palm. It carried a veneer of Gerald's blood. Her tears felt as though they would freeze to her face, and her head ached like she'd been struck with an axe blade. She became dimly aware of the cold weight of his arm, and she stifled the urge to cry once more. She sat up, and his hand slid from her shoulder. When she looked back at him, his gaze remained locked upon the ceiling. She stared at him for what seemed like an eternity before reaching out and closing his eyelids. Her bare skin brushed against his for one last time, her frigid fingers scarcely warmer than his face. He'd gone. No reason to stay behind anymore. Surveying the room revealed only two options: the locked door to the remaining unknowns, and a dark corridor leading to the depths of Point 7. Only Sven and the commander had journeyed down there, and Gerald had ordered it quarantined the moment he arrived back at base camp. He'd classified it on the spot, saying the other Octobers didn't have a need to know. Bridget had grown used to dealing with classifications in the Seekers, and hadn't questioned him. She looked back at the ancient metal door to the antechamber and wondered how long it would hold up against the unknowns. What equipment could they have for cutting and drilling? Certainly they'd have blowtorches, but those would take days on something that thick. It sounded like they had a hydraulic drill, but that meant they'd have a support operation too. They certainly didn't drag a one-ton piece of equipment into the wilds of the Boreal Nivalis without a cargo plane. Her heart fluttered. She could fly a cargo plane. She could make a try for that. But they'd just shoot her like a dog. The grinding stopped, and she swallowed hard. Had they found a way in? She nearly shouted as four loud bangs echoed through the room. They came again. Someone was knocking. She would hide. She wouldn't answer. Perhaps if they thought she was dead, it would buy her more time to think of an escape plan. She looked down at Gerald's body, though, and wondered to what she would escape. Maybe it would be better to go to sleep here with her beloved. She picked up her pistol and placed it to her temple. The tunnels below were probably a dead end anyway, and the plane would be so very far away through hostile territory. Why shouldn't she stop her suffering here and now? Her finger tightened around the trigger, and she locked back the hammer. Just one moment of strength, and she could be weak forever. She stopped. She'd never aspired to weakness before. All of her time with the Seekers had led to her assignment with the October Squadron, one of the most daring combat units in the world. She had always worked to be the best, and now that she'd been bested, she wanted to give up? Her head ached. Something exerted a will upon her. She recognized it from the base camp.
It was worth a shot,
came Rory Callender's voice through the door.
Sometimes they'll spare us the trouble of killing them.
She didn't answer.
And don't bother pretending to be dead or gone. I've been in your thoughts. I know you're there.
Her voice sounded dead, as though she hadn't spoken in ages.
You killed my husband.
Recently married, are we? Besides, you don't know which one of us did that. It might not have been me. It might have been, Bill.
I'll kill you for it all the same, Callender. I'll kill every last one of you.
She stared into the door, trying to visualize him on the other side.
I'm a busy man. No time to die here.
She checked her bullets. 3 rounds left.
Is that why you went mugging about my head while I slept?
He laughed.
Well, if you're going to make it easy by sleeping next to the door.
Oh, so you have a range, do you? Handy information.
It was his turn to remain silent. She'd touched a nerve with that observation.
No matter what, Special Agent, I shall be the one to survive. The one that got away. Keep telling me your weaknesses and see what it earns you. It's hard to believe a fool like you was once a Queensman.
Then she gathered her things, pulled on her gloves, began her march into the quarantined tunnels below. The path through the icy corridors felt endless, and her stomach began to growl shortly after embarking. She'd only walked a few kilometers when she had to stop. The walls and floors bore signs of advanced engineering and magical circuitry across their surfaces, and they glittered with lines of latent power. Whoever constructed the complex was either brilliant, insane, or both. For some reason, though, no matter how far she trod down the strange corridor, she could hear the pounding of the unknown's drill against the door. She sat down and rummaged through the pockets of her parka, locating a single bar of honeyed trail mix, a common ration. It was all she'd kept with her at the time of the attack, a morning's breakfast for a normal day. She stared down at the brown paper wrapping of the 6-inch bar of fruit and nuts, as though she could somehow make it grow. She thought of the unknowns likely tucking into their own rations of meat and cheese, and she wanted to spit with anger. Bridget pocketed the bar, saving it for a desperate moment. She looked back to see how far she'd traveled and discovered the reason for the sound of the drill. She'd only come about 15 meters. The agent swore aloud, and the drilling stopped.
"Agent, are you there?"
came Rory's muffled voice.
"No sense in asking."
"Just being polite. I'm not a savage, you know."
"Could have fooled me."
She jogged a few more meters down the hall and spun around. No progress.
"You've become frustrated. Why not make this easier?"
"Because I want you dead."
Rory grunted.
"That'll be the day."
She gazed down the long corridor, no closer to her destination.
"Why can't I pass?"
she said to no one in particular. A strange voice, like a woman speaking into a copper pipe, echoed through the room in answer.
"Are you ready for what lies beyond?"
"What was that?"
said Rory. A thousand whispers in every language erupted into Bridget's ears as the air hummed with power. She heard Rory shriek outside, and she knew the voice had invaded his head as well. It mustn't have taken kindly to him, because she heard the shouts of his men calling to restrain him. She imagined him writhing upon the ground, clutching at his temples and frothing, and smiled. Still, the problem remained. How to answer the voice?
"Pardon, miss?"
was all she managed.
"You've finally arrived,"
said the voice.
"I ask you, why should you be allowed to pass? Why should you touch my heart?"
she began.
"Please, I beg you. The men outside want to kill me. Surely you have some defenses."
"Humans die all the time. Why would you be any different?"
replied the woman's voice, and the hallway went dark. Bridget rushed into the shadows, her strength failing her in the final steps, and she fell to her knees.
"Please, whoever you are, my love gave his life that I might be here."
The voice replied, but only after a long moment.
"Was his name Gerald Krenz?"
"What?"
asked Bridget, her blood freezing in her veins.
"The Octobers and the Unknowns. You're only motes of dust drifting through the sunlight. Why not end your suffering, as it is the only thing you know?"
The offer tempted her. She felt her hand reach to her sidearm before she knew what she was doing. She forced herself back into reality.
"I can't just yet, whoever you are. Please, I can't die just yet. My love, he wouldn't have wanted it that way."
"He knows you well, Bridget. He speaks to you with love and compassion,"
said the voice. She swallowed tears and took another step into the darkness. A thin ray of hope passed through her mind.
Are you holding him captive?"
"He is dead, and yet he proposes. He no longer breathes, and yet I've watched him surface in Lake Richter, gasping for air, clutching a ring and laughing aloud. I have watched his mother kiss his forehead. I have watched you break his heart with your devotion to the Seekers."
"I don't understand."
She looked back at Gerald's body, restraining herself from moving any closer.
"He knows only love for you, Lucky. Of this I am certain. Do you come to me for love or hatred?"
She closed her eyes.
"Does it matter?"
"Perhaps they are the same thing in this case. You are wiser than you look,"
said the woman, and the lights flickered on, illuminating a path for Bridget.
You may proceed.
Streamers of arcane power ran the length of the final stretch of the corridor. Bridget checked behind herself often to make sure she was actually progressing. Every time her stomach began to growl, she took a bite of her trail mix. The salty nuts crumbled into sand inside her dry mouth, and she longed for a drink of water. She thought of the hot cocoa back at base camp and hoped the unknowns had decided to take a break and have some. The longer they dawdled with trivial matters, the longer she had to assess the ruins and find a method to murder them all. During her approach, the air felt thick with energy. She heard distant musical notes, though she couldn't tell the source. The hairs on her arm stood at attention, and her hackles rose. It felt as though an arc of magic would leap from the wall into her, destroying her instantly. She pushed against the invisible force and parted the way before her like a call, as though passing into another world. She gazed upon the final archway, 2 stories high and wider than 20 men abreast, leading to a large, ice-covered room. A single coffin occupied the center space, and inside its glass walls lay a beautiful woman with black hair, clothed in the green regalia of a noblewoman. Her skin looked almost blue in the pale light of the frosty room. Bridget blinked, and the other side of the doorway had been replaced with another destination. It led to a single shaft of sunlight, illuminating a design upon the ground. The vastness and intricacy of the mosaic eluded her, and Bridget stepped closer in the hopes of analyzing its patterns. When she stood mere feet from her destination, the woman she'd just seen in the coffin emerged from the darkness. Brilliant green silk wrapped the pale figure, scintillating like the auroras high above in the night sky. A snood captured her jet-black hair in a glimmering mesh, not a single strand falling from its assigned place. Golden sleeves, encrusted with gems that twinkled like starlight, sheathed her feminine arms before giving way to bare, milk-white shoulders. A deep, violet stain coated her plump lips, and regal shades of blue and purple paint wreathed her sad eyes. She smiled, and Bridget froze.
"Hello, Bridget Forsythe,"
she cooed. Her voice bore a light Western Kaldavi accent and resonated through the open space beyond the corridor with an ominous harmonic. The darkened room must have been enormous by the sound of it.
"Hello, madam."
Their eyes met, and Bridget's breath grew quicker. The strange woman turned away slightly, looking back over her shoulder with piercing green irises.
"My name is Gemma De Luca. You need not be so formal with me, Lucky. I have seen your darkest moments."
Bridget gripped the pistol in its holder. Tales of seekers meeting their ends in mysterious dig sites abounded, and she had no doubt the person who stood before her was not a human in the traditional sense of the word. This woman, whoever she was, had lived down here for a very long time. When the Octobers first arrived and broken the seal on the cathedral, it had been pressurized, intact for centuries.
"Are you alone, Miss De Luca? Are there others?"
The stranger smiled, but made no reply. Bridget looked for comfort in the checked walnut grip and machined steel of her Weston 45, but the curl of Gemma's lips told her the gun was unnecessary. She didn't draw, but her stomach tumbled with fear.
"Please answer the question, Miss De Luca."
"There are many others, and yet there are none. Would you like to see them?"
She bowed her head.
"Yes. Call to them, if you would."
"I think perhaps it would be better if I showed you the rest of the room."
Gemma traced a simple glyph, and little yellow bulbs flickered alight throughout the cavernous space. The room stretched at least 300 feet high, with millions of windows set into a brass latticework. The top ones scintillated, dividing like soap bubbles as the room writhed. The glass glowed with a gentle aquamarine light, the color of the ocean at sunset. The pair stood upon a platform over a tremendous device of crystals and steel wrought into a strange helical pattern. The room grew warm with the introduction of light. Bridget stepped to the edge of the platform and looked down. It had to be at least 15 stories to the bottom, where the superstructure became a mishmash of machinery and supports. From deep within the colossal gears of the engine, she saw orange firelight and gossamer strands of magic suspended in the air like mist. When she turned to face the way she'd come, she saw the corridor inside a freestanding archway, a magic portal mounted on the platform. Amidst all of these wonders, though, she saw no other people.
"Where are we?"
she breathed. Gemma's eyes searched the room above, as though seeing its marvels for the first time.
"My heart, I welcome you to the conservatory."
With a great shake, the engine in the center spun up and the platform began to move. Bridget hunkered down so as not to fall, but her companion appeared completely unfazed, gesturing theatrically to the windows beyond the platform's edge.
"You are seeing the whole of my experiences throughout time. Long strands of moments, disjointed and rendered anew in the playhouse of my mind. These are not memories, but links to times remembered that we might visit. These are the most important seconds of our lives."
Gemma turned back and looked into Bridget with strange desire in her eyes, lonely, yet eager as a snake that spies prey.
"You, Agent Forsyth, are inside me."
Bridget yanked her gun from its resting place and leveled it upon the stranger's head. She heard strange voices emanating from the windows as they passed up the wall of the conservatory.
"I don't reckon I like the idea of being inside someone. It makes me feel like the main course."
"Put your gun down. If I had wanted to kill you, I would have refused you entrance to this place."
She lowered her weapon and glanced around. Now that she was closer to the windows, she could see different colors inside them, slowly coalescing.
"How do I escape from here?"
"Look around you. Escape exists everywhere."
The platform lurched to a halt. One side of the lift butted up against one of the windows, an aperture the size of a door. The agent took a few cautious steps toward the glass, and the colors and shapes on the other side gradually came into focus. She saw a man in a leather jerkin extending his hand toward her, his stern features a stark contrast to the warm gesture. Bridget felt her heart flutter and the distinct sensation of falling overtake her before her stomach settled. She smiled up at the man and took his hand, feeling the warm leather of his glove against the silk brocade of her own. The spring day felt crisp and perfect outside the castle, and he'd promised to take her into the garden to pick flowers. Luciano had changed much during the war, but his gentle heart remained. When Bridget looked into his eyes, she searched for their future together and wondered if he would ever ask for her hand. He leaned forward and kissed her forehead, and she felt her worries begin to melt. She looked out into the sunlight outside. So bright, she thought. It poured into the room like water. Then she was back on the platform, panting on her knees.
"What was that? A dream?"
Gemma clasped her hands together.
"Of course not. It was as real as this moment, perhaps even more so. You walked backward in time, if only briefly."
"But Luciano, how did I know those things about him? It felt like I was in someone else's mind."
"It was mine. Luciano was my lover, and he built this place for me."
Bridget's eyes widened. The genius of the conservatory threatened to overwhelm her as she attempted to comprehend its construction.
"No, but he can't have built all this."
Gemma chuckled and walked to the railing, taking hold and leaning out to look around.
"It would have taken any man 1,000 lifetimes to build this, and I only had half of one. I was dying when I met him, though I did not yet know it."
"Then how? How could he?"
"There is a place where strength holds no meaning, and the concept of scarcity is outmoded and ruined."
The surreal nature of Bridget's situation set in.
"You're joking."
"As I said, you're inside me. He constructed this place within my mind, using the highest forms of alchemy. I was not speaking figuratively."
The agent's head reeled as she struggled with the concept. It couldn't be true, but it had to be. The resources consumed by constructing an engine so grand would bankrupt entire countries. She doubted all the gold and gems in the world could have created such a lavish device, and it certainly would have left a historical impact upon the global economy. She stood up straight. The exhaustion, sickness, and hunger had fled her body, but she hadn't noticed in the surge of adrenaline upon discovering the conservatory. She looked at her hands and rubbed her fingers together, listening to the creak of the leather gloves. The matted fur collar of her parka brushed against her neck. The warmth of the room surprised her. She didn't feel cold enough to want a jacket, but she didn't feel nauseated by heat either. Did she even still inhabit a physical body? Bridget undid the frog buttons of her parka, sliding it off. The smell of old sweat assaulted her from her khaki shirt, and she winced at the salt stains on her clothes. She was in sad shape, but she felt none of the effects. The warm air refreshed her senses and soothed her skin. She looked up at Gemma, who surveyed her with an expression of quiet longing. The stranger's green eyes glowed with an odd internal light, like the reflection of the sun.
Time. It still passes here?
More so than anywhere else. The outside world's timeline can be manipulated in many ways, but this space will always exist as a constant. You may go back, or forward. You may repeat the past, but this chamber shall remain unchanged.
I've gone insane,
said Bridget, placing her hands on her knees and gulping deep breaths.
You say that every time you come here. I trust you will be all right.
Every time I come here?
You have visited me a dozen times before. You've told me everything about yourself, and our memories are now intertwined.
What?
The agent wanted to cry at the new revelation. They'd passed so far beyond the known. Her head felt light, and the room swirled as she stood in place. Her breaths came more and more quickly, and a wave of nausea crashed against her.
Oh dear. It seems you will faint this time as well.
Prove it to me. Show me something you could not have seen in my memories.
Gemma reached into a pouch at her side and grabbed a handful of something in each hand. She opened her hand, and she held Gerald's blood-encrusted engagement ring. She solemnly, slowly spoke. Then she opened her other hand, revealing 11 others exactly like it.
You've given one of these to me every time you come here, as proof of your passage.
I should have left bullets.
She joked, but she couldn't coax herself to laugh. Bridget took her own ring from her pocket and looked it over. The blood's pattern matched the others perfectly.
I cannot see what is not in a memory, and a choice never made is but a passing ghost. You have never dared to consider before this moment. But had Gerald's proposal gone according to plan? Had he offered you the ring that day on the lake?
Bridget didn't want to hear it, but she knew the truth before it was spoken. She felt as though she couldn't get enough air, and her heart thundered. Gemma closed her fingers around the rings.
You would have said no.
Her knees gave way. The world spun as Bridget fell to the ground.
If you've enjoyed any of the music you've heard today, it can be purchased on Amazon.com. Just search Last Days of the October Squadron. You can also find it online at thegearheart.com. This podcast was edited by Matt Weber and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.